Daf Yad Vashem, towards the bottom of Daf Ayin Dalid Amid Beis, about 11 lines from the bottom, with the words Amar Mar. In our mission at the top of the Amid, we learned that if there is a Gaf Shel Evan, a stone wine press, we are named with the Chavim Kain, and he filled up the interior, or lined the interior rather, with Zephis, which was a normal process, to make it waterproof. The problem was that the other Kichavim, when he would do this, added wine. The purpose of the wine would be a perfume, because the Zephis had a bad odor, and the wine would take away that odor. So in the Mishnah we learned, Minagva Zihita Haira. And Minagva means, as we will soon see, the Ezra Shem, that he has to take water and ashes and go through a certain process, and that's enough. That is all provided that the press is made out of stone. If, however, it is made out of wood, then Rebbe says it's enough to be a nagev. The Chacham, however, say you have to peel off the entire zephs. The problem is that if the press itself is made out of wood, the tendency was to add a lot more zephs, to cover it with a lot more zephs, and the nail there's a lot more of an absorption. And that's why the Chachamim disagree with Rebbe in this case, in the case of a wooden press, and they say you have to peel the zephs off. It's not enough just to be a nagev the zephs. The Mishnah concluded, if, however, the vat is made out of cheres, out of earthenware, then afal pi shakalaf es hazafes, even if you peel the zafes off, it's still going to be awesome. Because in regard to a vat that's made out of stone or wood, the only shaila is how much did the zafes absorb. In regard to a vat that is made out of cheres, it isn't only the zafes that absorbs the wine when he pours it in. It's the vat itself that absorbs the wine. Memela won't even help to peel off the zephis, because here it's not only a shiloh of the zephis, it's a shiloh of the vat. That was the Mishnah that we learned yesterday at the top of Ayin Dalet Amid Beis. We continue now 11 lines from the bottom, and that's Ayin Dalet Amid Beis, Amar Mar. We learned the Braisa, that Hagas in regard to the wine press, the Hanach in regard to the utensil that is used to draw the wine up from the press into the barrel, and the Anashbech, which is a type of a funnel, Shaloiv de Kechavim, in regard to any of these Kalim which belong to an Eivet Kechavim, I now want to take it and kasher it. Rebbe Matir Benigov, the Braisa states, Rebbe is Matir with Nigov. The Chachamim Maestrin and the Chachamim disagree. Now these Kalim, as we learned yesterday, don't have any Zephis on them, and they are clay cheres. So we see here we have clay cheres that was used for wine, and Rebbe is Matir Benigov, Frek the Gemara, but the Hanan Tanan, we learned at the end of our Mishnah, Shal Cheres, in regard to Cheres, Afo Pisha Kalev as a Zephis, even if you take the Zephis off, Arezu Asura. How come I didn't? That where the utensil itself is Cheres, the utensil itself absorbs the wine. And Nigov wouldn't help, Klipa wouldn't help, nothing would help. So how come the Braisa state over here that Rebbe is Matir Benigov? Now Rashi points out that Biatzim Bekash is even stronger. Because as we have seen at the conclusion of yesterday's shir, the Mishnah is referring to a case where the vat was never used, where we never pressed any grapes into it. The Braisa is talking about a gaf where we did press grapes. So if there is anything, there's more reason to be machmir in the Braisa. Yet in the Mishnah we see that if the vat is made out of cheres, just because the Yad Gichavim poured a little bit of wine in to take away the odor of the zephes, the cheres automatically absorbs the wine and it's aser. And here in the Braisa, where we actually used it to press grapes with, Rebbe's Matir Benigov, even though it's clay cheres. And for the Gemara and a Hanami, up until this point, we have a misconception as to the structure of the Mishnah. We assumed until now that at the conclusion of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah states, Vishal cheres, afal pisha kalav es zephis, even though you peel off the zephis at Ezu Asura, we assumed until this point that the Mishnah is referring to both the opinions of Rebbe and the Chachamim. That, says Rava, is not correct. Amar Rava, Sefer de Mefnitin Asan Lirabbanan. In other words, the Mishnah is to be understood as follows. Let us take a look at the Mishnah again at the top of the Yant. Gaf Shalevin Shazaf Zayvik Echavim Hakumoidim Minagva Zihitahira. The complications start when there is a lot more Zephis over here because the vat is made out of wood. Rebbe says Nigov is enough, and the Chachamim say you have to peel off the Zephis. Vishal Cheres, in regard to Cheres, Avo Bishakolev is a Zephis, say the Chachamim. This is only the Chachamim. The Chachamim who say that in regard to eights, Nigov is not enough, but you have to have cleaf of the Zephis, you have to peel off the tar. In regard to Cheres, the Chachamim say, even if you peel off the tar, it's still awesome. But that's not Rebbe Shita. Rebbe Shita is that Nigov helps, of course, for the Gaf Shel Evan, even the Chachamim are related to that. Rebbe Shita is that Nigov even helps for the Gaf Shel Eitz. But in regard to the Shel Cheres, Rebbe is Moida, Nigov won't help, but cleaf of the Zephis would help. Memel over here, where we're dealing with utensils that have no zephis on them. That's how we explained it in yesterday's shiur. There is no zephis in any of these utensils. Memele, Rebbe says, nigov is enough, because no zephis to start with is just as good as peeling off the zephis. And all Rebbe requires for klei cheres is also just to peel off the zephis. Let us first be magdim that the word ni'ava means a wine press. Rashi points out that the targum of the pasuk, chachlili einayim miyayin, which was Yaakov's bracha, is yitufin navayu bechamer, that your presses should pour wine. So the word na'ava means a press. Darash Rava continues the Gemara. Rava expounded, na'ava, in regard to the wine press, arsechu, you should kasher it with hot water. Rava, of course, referring to a gas, which until now was used by an Eved Kechav. Now here we have a major machlokes in this Tosfos, which appears in many areas and in regard to many respective different concepts throughout Shas, and that is Iru of a Klei Rishon. The vat, which they used to press grapes in, was a very, very large utensil. To say that when Rava says kasher this, to say that that means to pick up this entire utensil and put it into a pot of boiling water, that is virtually an impossibility. You can't tell someone to pick up a pool and put it into a pot of hot water to kasher it. Elamai, what does Rava mean when he says kasher it with hot water? He means to pour hot water into it. So it's mashma, says the Rebbeinu Tam, that when you pour from a clay rishon, iri from a clay rishon is just like the clay rishon itself. That too is a valid form of kashering. Another issue where that may pertain to would be in regard to Shabbos. Pouring from a clay rishon on the pot, in other words, to take a pot of boiling water off the fire and to pour it onto something, is just like cooking that something. If Iru Klei Rishon is Mamish Ke Klei Rishon. And that is the sheet of the Rebbeinu Tam, that Iru Klei Rishon is Klei Rishon, and is Adayas in this Gemara. The Rishbam, however, disagrees with the Rebbeinu Tam. The Rishbam says pouring from a Klei Rishon is not the equivalent of a Klei Rishon. When you pour something from a Klei Rishon, that's like a Klei Sheni. And Enochanami, if you really had to kasher something that seriously needed kashering, you could not do it by pouring hot water into it. You'd have to take that and put it into the pot of hot water. The reason that Iri is effective over here is because the wine is just cold, so the need to kasher over here is not as important as it is elsewhere. Memela, it is adequate to kasher it with a clay sheni. But Rava does not mean to say that pouring from a clay rishon is the same as the clay rishon itself. When Rava would send empty jugs to the city of Harfanya, as he put them into the sacks, he made sure, he took extra care, that sachavluhu apumayu, he put them with the mouth downwards, the chasimluhu avritzayu, and then he went and he sealed the top of the sack, with the top of the sack being sealed over the bottom of the jug, because the jug is laying upside down in the sack. Now he did this so that it should constitute a chaysim b'tach chaysim. This way, even if the Yaakum opens up the top chaysim, he won't have much time to work with, because he still won't have access to the jug. He's going to be looking at the bottom of the jug, being that the jug has been put in upside down. Now the reason for doing this is because Kesava Rav is of the opinion that called Avashem Achnisa Lekiyum Afil Lefisha Gazru Bei Rabbanah. Now, in yesterday's shiur, at the end of yesterday's shiur, we learned an afkamina between something that is machnisa lakiyam and something that is not machnisa lakiyam. Even though we have just finished saying that if somebody acquires a gas, shalevet kechavit, it needs nigov, it needs kashering, whatever the case may be, it is much easier to deal with the actual gas, with the actual press, than storage bottles of levet kechavit. The most difficult thing to kasher is where you have a jug where the Eved Kechavim kept his wine in here for storage, which means the wine may have been in here for literally years. The way to kasher this type of a thing is an extremely complicated process, as we have seen yesterday in Rashi, that you have to pour in water, leave it there for 24 hours, pour it out, repeat that again for another 24 hours, and again for a third set of 24 hours. Now, Rav is telling us over here that any type of utensil which is normally used for storage, which is usually machnisa lakiyam, Chazal asked that this type of utensil should be in the hands of an Eved Kechavim even for a short while, even though it would not have been possible for him to keep wine in this utensil any longer than he keeps wine in his gas. Still, Chazal asked allowing this jug to be in the hands of an Eved Kechavim, says Rava, just like they asked the wine itself to be in the hands of Eved Kechavim, and it's all exeyah that you should not allow this to remain in the possession of an Eved Kechavim for an extended period of time. Mamela, that is the reason that when Rava indeed sent these types of jugs to Yidden, even though they were empty jugs and there's no wine inside. He would take special care to make sure there's a chaisim b'tach chaisim, to do whatever is possible to make sure that the Eved Kechavim does not, without the knowledge of the Yid, pour any wine into these empty chaviyas. And that's why he put it in upside down and made sure to seal it from the top. In the Mishnah, we learned once again, in regard to a gaf shel evin, shezaf shel Eved Kechavim, in regard to a wine press where the Eved Kechavim tarred it up, so he poured some wine into it also to take out the odor from the tar. It is tar provided that we are menagevit. Everyone agrees to that. In regard to a press made out of wood, Rebbe says nigov is enough, and the Chacham say there you have to take off the tar. But the Gemara now wants to know, what is this process of menagva? How do we make sure there is no more moisture from the wine, everything is out? Bama menagva. Rabba Rab says b'mai, with water. Nothing else, just water. Rabba Barber Chan Amar, be afer, with ashes. Now let us first understand that ashes serve as a drying agent, and it also serves as somewhat of a detergent. At first glance, it seems that the Rav says all you need is water to get the wine out, and the Rabbi Bar Chanan says all you need is the ashes. Now the Gemara finds this very difficult to understand, because the Gemara knows this as a team that works together, the water and the ashes. That's how to properly rinse something. Frek the Gemara, something's wrong. Rav Amar B'mayim, just with water? B'mayim V'loy B'efer, no ashes at all? Then why does the Mishnah term this menagva? That's regular hadacha, that's just a rinsing. Menagva obviously means something a little bit more intense than that. On the other hand, it after Baruch Hanan Amar B'efer, does that mean B'efer just with the ashes of Eloi B'mayim? That's like soap without water. It doesn't have a pshat at all. Elam is like the Gemara, and we go now to the tap of Efayin Hayim Adal. What they're saying is as follows. Rav Amar Rav says B'mayim, water first. And the Huadin Le'efer, of course you have to put in ashes, but the ashes come after the water. And the Rabbi Bar Chana, Amar Rabbi Bar Chana says, Le'efer, the ashes first. And of course ashes without water is meaningless, the Huadin Le'mayin. But just that the water comes after the ashes. And even in regard to this, continues the Gemara, Veloy Pligi, there's no dispute between Rabbi and Rabbi Bar Chana. They are each referring to a different case. Haber Atifta, Haber Yaveshta. The Eved Kechavim pours the wine into the Zephis. If there is still some moisture from that wine, then the first thing to do is to put the ashes in, because the ashes will dry up that moisture. You put the ashes in, you are Meshavshiv, it explains Rashi, until it's dry, and then rinse it off with the water. That's what the Rabbi Bar Chanan is referring to. That's why he says the ashes first. Rav, on the other hand, is referring to a different case. He is referring to a case where the wine is already dry. There is nothing moist in here. Therefore, he says, put the water in first. Afterwards, come in with the ashes, and now be meshavshevet. When you put the water in first, apparently this sort of regenerates the moisture of the wine, and now the ashes come in and dries it up. But Rav and Rav Bar Chanan don't disagree. Both say you need water and ashes, and both say that sometimes the water comes first, and sometimes the ashes come first. Now, with this in mind, let us brace ourselves for the next piece of Gemara. Itmar. Bei Rav Mishmei de Rav Amri, the Talmidim of Rav in the Yeshiva of Rav repeated in the name of Rav that the purification process to kasher a utensil that has this non-kosher wine in it is either tarti or tlas. Either it comes in two stages or three stages. If the wine that created the problem is still moist over here, then there are two stages. We first put the ashes, this dries it up, and that's followed by water. On the other hand, if the wine that caused the problem, if the non-kosher wine is not moist any longer, it's all dried up, in that case, there are three stages. We first have to put water. This sort of regenerates the moisture. Then the ashes come in to do their job, and this is followed by water. Memela, once again, Rav says the purification process is tarti plus either two or three. Two when it's moist, ashes, then the water. Three when it's dry, water, ashes, and then the water again. Shmuel Amar Shmuel says that the purification process comes in either tlas or dalid, either three or four stages. Three stages, when the non-kosher wine is still over here, it still can be felt, it's still moist. We put the ashes there first, followed by water, and ashes for a second time. Now even though l'maisa we aren't going to leave the ashes there, we're going to rinse that away with water all the way at the end. So really there should be an additional stage. We don't count that last stage because the purpose over there is just practical, to rinse away the ashes. But that's not needed for the purification process. What is needed for the purification process, according to Shmuel, comes in either three or four stages. Again, when the wine is still moist, three stages. Ashes first, followed by water, and then ashes again. And when the non-kosher wine has already dried up, in this case we have to have four stages for the purification process. First water to re-moist it, followed by ashes, water again, and ashes for a second time. Now here too, although technically there should be an additional stage, a fifth stage, because we aren't going to leave the ashes there, we're going to rinse it off. However, that's just practical, that's not needed for the purification process, and mainly we don't count that as a stage. So basically, what we're saying until this point is that in the general purification process, Zav says the ashes are to be used once, Shmuel says the ashes are to be used twice. Mamela, according to Rav, the numbers are going to be 2 and 3. When it's moist, ashes first, followed by water, a two-stage process. When it's dry, water first to make it moist again, followed by the ashes and the water, a three-stage process. And according to Shmuel, the numbers are going to be 3 and 4. When it's moist, ashes, water, and ashes again. When it's dry, water first, and only then can we have the ashes once, water and the ashes for the second time. So this is the machlokes between Rav and Shmuel, or at least in Surah, this was their version of the machlokes. The Surah Masni Hachi, however, continues the Gemara, the Pumpadisa and the other major yeshiva, Pumpadisa, over there, Masnu, Bei Rav, Ami, Mishmei, De Rav, there they learned that the yeshiva of Rav said in the name of Rav, that the numbers are Klas and Dalid. There they said that it's Rav who says the process is either a three-stage process or four-stage process. Shmuel Amar, and Shmuel says that it's Dalid, hey, that the process is either a four-stage process or a five-stage process. And Veloy Pli. And there is no machlokes between Rav and Shmuel. Now what the yeshiva of Pumpadisa is saying is that both Rav and Shmuel agree to the way we understood Shmuel according to Sula's version. In other words, Rav also says you need the Afer twice. Therefore, according to Rav, the numbers are 3 and 4. If it's moist, first the ashes, followed by water, followed by ashes again. If it's dry, there's a four-stage process. First, water to re-moist it. And then the next three steps, twice the ashes with the water in the middle. Now, why are we saying over here, according to Shmuel, that the numbers are 4 and 5? First of all, what is 4 and 5 suddenly? And second of all, how can you say Rav and Shmuel don't argue? If Rav says that it's 3 and 4, then how can Shmuel say it's 4 and 5 and they're not arguing? Zakhtig Maravaita, that's Pashit. Mar Kachashiv Maya Basroi, Mar Loi Kachashiv Maya Basroi. We mentioned previously, according to Shmuel, originally, when we explained Shmuel's Pshat, where do we get the numbers 3 and 4? If it's moist, first ashes, followed by water, and then ashes again. And we said that in reality, he's going to have to rinse it off. So technically speaking, when we say the three-stage process is ashes, water, and ashes, there's really another stage. He has to rinse those ashes away. We mention, however, that we don't count that as a stage because that's only necessary for practical reasons. It's not necessary for kashrus reasons. Now, that is why we can possibly say that although Shmuel says 4 and 5 and Rav says 3 and 4, they don't argue. Because both agree as we understood Shmuel originally. According to the Pumpadisa's version, according to the version of the people from Pumpadisa, both Rav and Shmuel agree you have to put Afer there twice. And the Mela, the numbers are always at least 3 and 4. If it's moist, ashes first, water, and then ashes. If it's dry, water, ashes, water, and ashes. But because you're left with ashes at the end, there's this other last rinsing off, which is needed for practical reasons, because you don't want to have wine with ashes. But it's not really needed for the kashrus process. So when Shmuel presented the halacha, he counted that as a stage. That's why his numbers are 4 and 5. When Rav presented the halacha, he does not count it last time. And the Mela, his numbers are 3 and 4. But again, according to the Pumpadisa, according to the people from Pumpadisa, rather, Rav and Shmuel are not arguing with each other. Both agree you have to put the Afer there twice, and therefore the numbers will be either 3 or 4. This is one pshat in Rashi as to how to learn Al Gemara. Rashi quotes B'Shem Hizr Bey. Rashi, however, quotes another pshat in the Gemara, B'Shem, his father. Now, according to this pshat, we have to basically erase whatever we learned until now, at least for the time being. Being that Rashi says he prefers this second pshat, let us now see the Gemara again. Itmar, we are starting again, three lines from the top. Now with the pshat from Rashi's father. Itmar beirav nishmei derav amri, they said, that Rav says the purification process is either tarti or tlas, either in two stages or three stages. The two stages, according to this pshat, says Rav, is when there is no moisture left over from the non-kosher wine, when it's dry. Here we now have two stages. First stage, water to remoist it, followed by aifer. And that is all. On the other hand, we are now saying, when it's still moist from the non-kosher wine, there are three stages. Aifer first, followed by water, and then aifer again. Now, until now, we were saying that when it's dry, you always have to have an extra step, because you have to start off by making it moist again with an extra water. Now, suddenly, according to Rav, in this second shot of Rashi, we're turning it around. And we're saying when it's dry, we only need two steps, Mayim and Afer. And when it's wet, when it's still moist, then you need an extra step. Because you have to start off by putting the Afer there, and only then can you put the Mayim and Afer. Ishmul Amar, and Shmuel says, Klas, doubt. The numbers are not two or three, it's three and four. Shmuel is still saying, as we understood all along, that when it's moist, it's less than when it's dry. It's when it's dry that you have an extra step of having to put the water there. So Shmuel's pshat in this version stays the same as we had it originally. Steps are three and four, three stages when it's moist, Afer first, followed by Mayim, Afer again, four stages when it's dry, because before you have the Afer, Mayim, and Afer, you have to have an extra placing of water beforehand. So now suddenly the machlokes between Rav and Shmuel is a much broader machlokes. Taisus doesn't like this pshat for that reason. Taisus says it's svaris hafuchas. Rav and Shmuel are mamish working with two opposite svaris. Rav is going with the mahalach that when it's moist there's more, and Shmuel going with the mahalach that when it's dry it's more. Rashi, however, has his reasons, as it is explained at the end of the Rashi, where Rashi prefers this pshat, and we will repeat it one more time. According to Rav, the numbers are 2 and 3. 2, when the non-kosher wine has dried. Here we have two stages, just the water followed by the ashes. When it's moist, however, there are three stages. Afer first to dry it up, and only then the water and the ashes. According to Shmuel, the numbers are 3 and 4, and as we said previously, there are less stages when it's wet. Then all we have is the afer, mayim, and afer. However, if it's dry, you need water first, and then the afer, mayim, and afer. Zrak the Gemara Vaita, we continue to see the Gemara. This again, according to the pshat that Rashi brings b'shem his father. B'sura masnu hachi, at least that's how they understood the machlokes between Rav and Shmuel in the yeshiva of Sura. However, in Puntadisa, masnu bei Rav ami mishmei de Rav, there they learned that the yeshiva of Rav said in the name of Rav that the numbers are not 2 and 3, the numbers are tlas dalet, 3 and 4. Now the yeshiva of Pumbedisa is still maintaining that Rav says that it takes more stages to purify something that is wet than something that is dry. And therefore the numbers are klas dalid. For something that is dry, there are only three stages. Water first to re-moisten it, followed by afer, followed by mayim. When it's wet, then there are four stages. Afer first to dry it up, and only then do you have the water, afer, and water. So once again, the yeshiva Puntadisa also agrees that Rav says when it's moist, it takes more stages than when it's dry. Except that the surah, the yeshiva of surah, said the numbers are 2 and 3. We say 3 and 4. Ishmuel Amar, and Shmuel says, according to the Puntadisa, Shmuel still argues with Rav. Shmuel says that it takes more stages when it's dry than when it's wet. However, previously we had the numbers 3 and 4, according to Shmuel. We now say, Dalet v'hei, 4 and 5. Previously we said, according to Shmuel, that when it's wet there are three stages. Afer first, followed by Mayim, followed by Afer. Now we're saying four stages when it's wet. Afer first, followed by Mayim, followed by Afer, and Mayim at the end. According to the version of Surah, Shmuel said there are four stages for when it's dry. Water first, followed by Afer, followed by water, followed by Afer. We now say there are five stages. Indeed, when it's dry, it's water first, followed by Afer, followed by water, followed by Afer, but one more stage. Water at the end to rinse it off. And the Gemara continues, V'loi pligi. V'loi pligi does not mean, as we understood it in the first version of Rashi, that Rav and Shmuel don't argue. Rav and Shmuel surely do argue. According to Rav, it's mamish just the opposite of Shmuel. Rav says it takes more for when it's wet. Shmuel says it takes more for when it's dry. Rav says when it's dry, you need Afer only once. Shmuel says when it's dry, you need Afer twice. V'loi pligi just means that the yeshivas of Surah and Puntadisa don't argue. How can you say they don't argue? The numbers are mamish different. According to the version of Surah, the numbers are 2, 3, 3, 4. According to the version of Puntadisa, the numbers are 3, 4, 4, and 5. Zakti Gemara, that's not a real machlaikis, that's just a shy love, do we count the last rinsing or not? When you end off with the detergent, we're going to rinse it once again for practical reasons, but technically that's not necessary for the kashrus aspect, so mar kachashiv maya basroi, mar lo kachashiv maya basroi. That's why Puntadisa's numbers are always one ahead. But as far as the etzem machlaikis, there is no dispute between Puntadisa and Surah. They both have the same version of the machlaikis between Rav and Shmuel. Now there is a third version to this Gemara that is brought down in Tysis. We, however, at this point, will go further. Bai minei mi Rebbe Yavo. A shayla was asked of Rebbe Yavo. Hani gurgi di armoi mai. What is the halacha with the gurgi that belongs to the armoi? Now Rashi has two pshatim as to what this is. The derech was that they used to pile up a lot of grapes, and this pile of grapes would be termed the tapuach, the apple. On top of this tapuach, a large beam would come down with the purpose of pressing out the juice from the grapes to get the wine out. Now, to prevent any of the grapes to go flying away from the tapuach as the beam comes down, they would wrap the tapuach around, they would wrap around the grapes with a type of a net called an ikel. This is what the Gemara is referring to. Rashi then explains a second shot in what Gurgi di Armoi is. Rashi explains, after the process was finished, all the grapes would be taken. After the grapes were already pressed out, they would be put into a type of a basket, a type of a woven basket, like a wicker basket. And in this basket, again, for a second time, a beam would come down to get out whatever moisture was left over and didn't come out in the first pressing. So whatever the case may be, whatever this gurgi is, the shayla is, how do we kasha this? Amalei Rebbe Avo, so Rebbe Avo responded, Tani Sua. It's a Beferish that they saved in Tats. We learned to Reish HaYogitav, if somebody had his vat, the vat where we press out the grapes, Ubeis Badov, that is the equivalent for olives, where we press out the olives. Tmei, if it happened that these presses were Tanei, Ibikish LaSoysen B'Tahara, he wants to make them into Tahara, or rather he would like to figure out a way to make grapes over here or make olives over here that will not be Tanei, that would be Tar. So Hadafin, Daphne of the large door-like boards which are used to press either the grapes or the olives. The Odashin, this is the actual vat that the pressing was done in. The Alulavin, these are types of brooms. They used to make brooms out of Lulavin. So Medichin, as far as they are concerned, all you have to do is to wash them. Now, we like Kolin Shalmi Tzarin, and a Kolin, as we previously explained, is this type of a net that is wrapped around the Tepuach to make sure that the grapes don't go flying as the beam comes down a bit. If Shalmi Tzarin, if it's made out of types of thin reeds, wooden reeds, or Bishol Bitzputs, or they're made out of Bitzputs, and there's a Shaila what this is, Rashi brings two Pshatim, either types of polyester. In the Aruch it says this means flax, but Akulpanim, the point is, the nature of these substances is that they absorb very much. Menagvan, this needs the process of nigov, and nigov, as we have seen, means that you put the afer there first to dry it all up, and afterwards it is washed and rinsed, and of course there are the respective shitas of how many times you have to go through the process. Vishal shifa, if it's made out of a type of straw, vishal gami, which is also a type of grass, these substances have tremendous absorption powers. Therefore, even nigov won't do. But rather, miyashnon yud beis chodesh, you have to allow it to stand for 12 months. After it ages for 12 months, not being used, then it's tar. Shimon Mengel Mil says, Menichan, all you have to do is to leave them alone from 1 year to the next, migas lagas, from one season of pressing to the other season of pressing, or mibad labat, from one season of pressing the olives to the other season of pressing the olives. Frek the Gemara, hainu Tanakama, that's precisely what the Tanakama said, that you have to let it stand alone for 12 months. And for the Gemara, ikabinayu chursi the afli. The Nafkamina is that the Tanakama demands a precise time period of 12 months. Now, if Shimon Gamliel, who says from one season to the other season, this is not necessarily 12 months. Sometimes the grapes come around late, that means afli. Sometimes they come around early, that means chursi. So it's be'erach around a year from one season to another, but it's definitely not precise. Rabbi Yossi, I mean, Rabbi Yossi says, what happens if somebody wants to kasher his presses and he does not want to wait an entire year, or even according to the Shimon Gamliel, almost an entire year? Then he should pour hot water over it. Or he should pour the mezesim over it. Now the mezesim is water that was cooked with the olives. The derech was to cook the olives in the water to take out the fat from the olives, and this water was very, very sharp. Because of its sharpness, when you now pour it on something else, it takes out all of the bleias. It removes any prior taste. You should put it under a tzinor, under some type of a pipe or faucet that has a constant flow of water. Or you should put it under a well where the water from the well is coming out in a steady, strong, and constant current. The kama, just how long does he have to leave it like this, under the steady flow of water or under the steady stream from the mayan? And the Gemara is soon going to explain what exactly an oina is. How long is this? The Braisa concludes, Kedach shi'amru b'yayin esach, and as we explain this in regard to yayin esach, kach amru b'taharis, the same is true for taharis, for converting something that is tamei into something to be tar. Like the Gemara, klapi lai, it should be just the opposite. B'taharis kamina. This Braisa is only referring to taharis. Eleanor, we should read Kedach shi'amru b'taharis, the same process that we apply over here to taharis. The same would be true if you want to be in the taher, the gas or the utensils used in the press, not necessarily from tumah to tahara, but rather from yayin esach to kosher yayin. So the mail of this answers the shaila that was asked of Rabbi Vo, how we can kasher these utensils. Frag the Gemara, kama oina. Now we said one of the means of kashering it is to leave it under the steady stream of water for an oina. How long is an oina? Amar Rabbi Chiyah Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, oyoyim, oylaila. Either a day or night. That is one opinion. The sheet of Rav Chana Sheina. The Yamila others say it was Rav Chana Bar Sheina, Rav Chana the son of Sheina. Amar Rabbi Rav Chana. Amar Rav Yechanan. Chatzi yoin v'chatzi laila. The shear is a half a day and a half a night. Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak v'lei pligi. Actually, there is no dispute over here. It depends what time of the year. Habit Tekufas Nisan v'Tishrei. During Tekufas Nisan and Tishrei, there is an equal amount of time between night and day. Both are 12 hours. In regard to that time period, we say either a day or a night. In other words, a complete 12 hours. On the other hand, when do we say half a day and half a night? That's when the day and night don't necessarily have 12 hours each. Habitkufas tams the tavis. Kufas tams, the days, of course, are much longer and the nights are shorter. During tavis, the nights are much longer and the days are shorter. So there, you have to have a complete 12-hour period. Therefore, we say half a day and half a night. But there is no machlokes. Both opinions say that the shear of the oina, the shear that the water has to be storming onto the kalim, is for a complete 12 hours. Now Rashi paskens over here that seemingly the bavo, based on the braisa, goes against our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says in order to kasher the press, you have to have the complicated process of the nigov, which is the water and the ashes. From the braisa over here, it's mashma that hadacha, just rinsing, is enough. The Rishbam, however, had a gears in the Braisa that the Adashim, which refers to the press in the Braisa, has to go through the process of Niguf. The Rishbam is not gears the word Madichon in the Braisa, he is gears the word Minagvan in the Braisa. The Rosh also argues with Rashi. The Rosh says Rashi should have said, Bisholfayfim Holochacharanekel, and the Rosh also points out a Gemara previously where Rava said, you have to pour hot water, you have to kasher the gas. So according to Rashi, you would have to say that's referring to a gas Sholcheres. However, as far as a gas made out of eitz or out of evan, according to Rashi, there was a machlokes between the Mishnah and the Braisa. The Braisa says just rinse them off, and the Mishnah says you have to go through the process of niguf. Now, the Rebbeinu Tam also has the gears in the Braisa Madichon that rinsing is enough, except that he says the Adashin mentioned in the Braisa is not referring to the press the way Rashi learns. He says the Adashin is referring to a type of a beam that went on top of the other beams. Being that this adash is so far removed from the actual grapes, it is in regard to this that the Braisa says it's enough to rinse it. But according to the Rebbeinu Tam, even the Braisa would say, as far as the gas itself is concerned, hadacha would not be enough. Tosfos, however, says that we need not necessarily say that there is a machlokes between the Mishnah and the Braisa, even if we are to assume that the adash over here is a press. Because the Braisa is referring to a press that belongs to a Yid, and the Mishnah is referring to a press that belongs to an Eved Kechav. The nail over there, you have to have niguv, while if the press belongs to a yid, it's possible that hadacha would be an adequate means of kashering. Zakti one of Aita, Amr of Yehuda. Hani Ravuki di Armoi. Ravuki is a type of a sifter, type of a filter. If it belongs to an Eved Kechavim, the Eved Kechavim used this to filter out his wine. His wine comes through this. The Mazia, if it's made out of human hair, Madichan, then all you have to do is to rinse it off to make it kosher, because human hair does not absorb much. However, the Amra, if the filter is made out of wool, in that case, Menagvan, you have to go through the process of Nigov, which means the Mayim and the special detergent made out of the ashes. The Kisne, if it's made out of flax, this absorbs more than anything else does. And the Mela, there is no other Eitzah but Niashnan. You have to allow it to stand for 12 months unused. Rav Yehuda, however, cautions, Rav Yehuda Kitri, if there were any types of gnats over here, then Shariloh, you have to open them up first. Zakat Gemara Vayit. Hani Dekuli V'Chalata D'Amoi. These are different types of strainers. Dekuli is types of baskets. Chalata, explains Rashi, is a beehive type of a structure, like a kazaris, made with little pieces of wood. And so for Yid wants to kasha this, it depends how it's strung together. D'Chayiti B'Chavli D'Tzuri. If it's with fibers of a palm tree, that's not a problem because this doesn't absorb much. Madichan, so just rinse it off. On the other hand, we turn out to Amud Beis. If it is held together, if it's tied together, ditzafsa, with a type of grass, which is very absorbent, then hadacha would not be enough. Lenagvan would have to go through the process of nigov. Dekisna, if it's tied together with flax, then miyashna. Then nothing would help unless you just leave it stand and do nothing for 12 months. If there are gnats over here, then you have to make sure to open those gnats before the respective process. Now there's a machlokes of shayinim if you have to open the gnats in order to let it stand. Rashi says that if you're going to rinse it or wash it, you have to open the gnats because there is some wine absorbed into the gnats. On the other hand, it's mashma from Rashi that in regard to the miyashnan, if it's made out of flax, where the only way to make this kosher is to allow it to stand for 12 months and not to use it, in that case, opening the gnats is totally superfluous. Because here it's just a process for whatever wine that is absorbed here to sort of evaporate. Now, if that's the case, the wine and the gnats are going to evaporate just like any other wine in this keli. The Rosh, however, says that you have to open the gnats even just to allow it to stand. Although we are extremely machmir with the strainers that have flax in them, because we say the flax is very absorbent, and we say nigov, even the very thorough rinsing, is not enough. Taisa says we should not assume from this that if you have yayin nesach, or something that is not kosher, that falls onto a tablecloth that is made out of flax, would after that tablecloth unless you leave it standing for 12 months. Reason being, explains Taisa, that it's dafka these particular kalim that the Chachamim were reminded that the Chachamim told us about. These particular kalim, in the way that they were set up, were in a position to absorb much more than a tablecloth can. In addition, Tysus points out the way they used to wash tablecloths, at least with Mana Tysus, where it would be washed several times and it would be banged out with a stick several times. This would be, Alpi Pashtus, surely adequate to get out any isser that may have been absorbed by the material. Sakti Monavaita Itma. Amaretz, Shehoyshid Yodi Lagas. If he extended his hand into a wine press, the naga the eshkalis, and he touched the clusters of grape that were laying in the wine, Zakti Gemara, this is a machlokes between Rabbi and the Rav Chiya. Chad Amar, one man the Amar says, eshkal, the cluster of grapes, v'chol svivaisav, and all of the wine in the area of those grapes that he touched, t'mei and bear tamei, however, v'chol agas kula, the rest of the entire gas, t'hoira, is tahar. Chad Amar, one man the Amar says, kol agas the entire gas is tummy. You can't make a distinction between the wine in the immediate area of the grapes that he touched and the rest of the wine. Frekti Gemar. Ulamand Amr, according to the Mandi Amr, that Eshkel v'chol svivaisav tmei. Only the cluster of grapes that he touched and the immediate area are tummy. However, v'chol agas kula, the rest of the gas tahir is tar. Maishna mihadit nan, why is that any difference from the Mishnah that we learned? Shez Shanim Sabirachayim, Rashi explains, the derech was before they put the owls into the press, they first put it into a grinder. If it was grinded up, it would be much easier for the beam coming down on the press to do its job, to get the moisture out. So the Mishnah states as follows. Sheretz Shanim Sabirachayim, if a sheretz was found in the mill, ain't matami elamokit magoy, it is only matami the place that it touched. It is not matami all of the olives in the grinding machine. However, the imhoyam mashkin mihalach, if the olives already were grinded up to the extent that there is liquid, there is the oil that is pouring throughout, in that case, hakol tamei, but the sheretz touching one of them, everything becomes tamei. So l'chayyur, the same should be true here, being that the entire gaf is already filled with wine when the yam ha'aretz touches one of the clusters of grapes. The entire gaf should become tummy. And for the Gemara, there is a nafka mina between the olives and the grapes. Hasam le'mifsig v'le'midi. There, the olives are all separate. Once they're grinded up and the liquid is flowing, it is all considered one entity. A little bit becomes tummy, everything becomes tummy. Hakol here, maski yishkarlis. Here, we still have clusters of grapes that are separate and distinct. And they are mafsik from one another. So you can't just say that it's all one entity. If one becomes tummy, that does not mean that it all becomes tummy. Zakti mada oidu le rabbonim Rabbi Yirmiya. The rabbonim basket for Rabbi Yirmiya. The yami la others say lebrei Rabbi Yirmiya for the son of Rabbi Yirmiya. Kedivah huaymer, according to the mandi yama, that eshkol v'chol svivaisa of tmeyin. If the yamalaitz touches one cluster of grapes, that cluster of grapes, in addition to the wine in the immediate area, are tummy. However, that does not affect the wine of the rest of the press, so the chalagas kula, tahira, will remain tahar. Zak the Mishnah Vayitzeh. What we will be seeing now, B'ez Hashem, will be the last daf and last sugya of Masechta, the sugya of Tfilas Caleb. When the Yidden returned from their Mulchama with the Minyanim, the Pasuk in Pashas Matis, Kapitel Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Chas Aleph, tells us as follows. Vayomer lo zekayin el anshei hatzava haboyim lamulchama. These are the laws in which you have to abide by if you want to use the Caleb that you just acquired from the Midianim via the war. All metal vessels, anything from gold, silver, copper, iron, tin, and lead, you have to capture in the following manner. Anything which entered into fire, then the only way to extract the Yisr is Tavir B'Esh, is to, again, purify it with fire. And this, of course, lays down the most basic law of Kashrus and Kashrin Kalim, and that is that Kibolai Kach Paltai. As the Yisr is swallowed up by the Kali, as it penetrates into the Kali, in that same manner, you have to extract the Yisr from the Kali. For instance, a Kali that was only used with non-kosher cold liquid simply has to be rinsed off. A Kali that was used to cook non-kosher food, so there's a medium of water over here. In that case, you have to kasher it with hot water. Hagala. A keli that was used with non-kosher food directly on the fire, you fried with it or broiled with it, and there was no medium of water, this needs limon. You have to heat it up until there's a glowing red heat. The pasuk, however, when we listen to it again, we will hear, tells us just a little bit more than these halachas. Kol davar she'yavi be'esh, taviru be'esh. And the pasuk continues, v'taher. This is how it will become pure. It shall be pure. Ach b'nei nida yischata. Now the pashut pshat is that if it's tummy nase, if a keli is tummy, you have to spray on it nei nida. However, Chazal, that is our sugya, will also dash in from here that when one purchases a keli from an evikechavim, even if the keli is tahar, even if the keli is kosher, there is a requirement of tefila. The keli has to be immersed in a kosher mikvah. Now let us see our Mishnah. Halakeach klei tashmish min oiv dekechavim. If a yid buys klei tashmish utensils from oiv dekechavim, and as we will see in the Gemara, this refers bedavka to klei suda, el shedarka lihatfil, those kelim where the derech is to be matl them, to immerse them in a mikvah, yatfil. In other words, if you have the type of kelim that need no further kashering process as far as the kashrus is concerned, there is no iser in here, or it was the type of keli that was only used as cold liquid, then the only process that is necessary to make this keli ready for use for the yid is tefillah. On the other hand, lihagil, if it's a type of keli that you have to kasher with boiling water, for instance, kelim that were used with the medium of boiling water, anything from pots to big vessels, big vats, if it's cooked, if there's fire underneath and there's water inside, then you have to kasher them with boiling water. Lihagel, if the derech is to be magel these kelim, then yagel. Now the Gemara will explain this does not come to exclude the tefillah. After you kasher it with the boiling water, the tefillah is still necessary. Lalav in the yard, if it's a type of keli that needs libun, as explained, it was used directly with the fire, then yalav in bar. You have to cook it up until the fire becomes red hot. And the Mishnah gives us examples of some of these kelim that you have to cook up until they become red hot, heshfud, a type of spear that is used for broiling. It's directly on the fire. Or the hiskala, this is a type of a tray that one would find on a barbecue grill directly on the fire. Malavna in the yard, you have to make these kelim white hot in the fire. Now in the Gemara again, we're going to see exactly what the process of leaven is. But we have to remember, once again, that this is all besides with the chiyuv tefillah. Besides all of this kashering, you still have to tovel it to the mikvah. And the Mishnah concludes, hasakin, in regard to a knife, all you have to do is shafa v'hi tahayir. And the Rashi says, shafa means to sharpen it. And in the Gemara we're going to see, b'ezer Hashem, that this process of tahara, and we'll see exactly what this process is only adequate to continue using the knife with cold things. However, if you wanted to use this knife to cut hot things, then there are other kashering processes that would be necessary. Tanit has been taught, as we have explained in the Mishnah, that v'kulam, besides for all these processes of kashering, tzrichim tefillah b'arbon sa. Any keli, any utensil, cooking utensil or eating utensil purchased from an eved kechavit, has to be immersed in a mikvah of arbon sa. How do we know this? Amar Rav, the Yom HaKrav, the Pasuk says, in regard to the kelim that were brought back after the Muhammad with the Midyanim, kol davar asher yaveh be'esh, anything that the Midyanim used with fire, taviru be'esh. Then the only way to extract that iser is by putting the keli through the fire, because as explained, Kabbalah kach paltai, the same way the iser comes in, that's the only way it's going to come out. Afterwards, the Pasuk says, v'taher, then it's going to be pure. So, ha'isuf l'chakasiv tahara acheres. The word of the Torah teaches us that in addition to this, there is another process of tahara. And this additional process is besides for all of the kashering, the respective livon or hagalah or hadach, whatever it may need, besides for that, it needs tefillin, a mikvah, of rabban sa. Tani bakapar, the word of the Torah is not the only word that is added to the process of kashering in the pasuk. The pasuk also says, ach b'mei nida yischata. Now, mitoich shenemar b'mei nida usually refers to the efer of the paraduma. So, shenei ani, I would think perhaps, shetzar chaza shlishi v'shvi. I would think, perhaps, that in order for the keli to become kosher, you would have to sprinkle the water from the mei nida on the third and seventh day, the same way it has to be done in regard to tumas meis. Why then would the pasuk use the term b'mei nida? Zakti Gemara, Talmud Lima, the pasuk says, ach. And the cloud is, wherever we have the word ach, chalak, it comes to make a distinction. It is dafk in regard to tumas meis, the genit hazar shlish v'shri, not for the stam purchasing of kelim from Eved Kechav. Frek de Gemara, im kain, ma Talmud Lima, b'mei nida. Why does the pasuk say b'mei nida? Im kain, frek de Gemara, ma Talmud Lima, b'mei nida. So why does the pasuk have to say b'mei nida, implying that it needs hazar shlish v'shri? And then the pasuk has to have ach to make a distinction. So don't say b'mei nida to start with. And for the Gemara, from the B'mei Nida, we learn that you have to be toivel the kelim in mayim shenida tevelos ben, in the same kind of water that a nida is tevelos ben. Havi oimer arboim sa, and that is dafka with arboim sa of water in a kosher mikvah. So we have to be at some two drushes in the very same pasuk, implying the concept of tefilas kelim. We have the word that the Rav dashens, the word v'taya, and the B'mei Nida yischata, which Barakapara dashens. The Gemara tells us we need both. Itzach l'michtav v'taya, and the Itzrach l'michtav b'mei nida. Ikos of v'tayr. If the pasuk just wrote v'tayr, which indeed would have taught us that there was an additional process necessary, havamina would have thought, but v'tayr kaldahu. The gears of the bachi is havamina v'tayr b'kaldahu. I would have thought that, enochanam, you have to immerse it in something, but I wouldn't think you have to immerse it in mamish akashur and mikvah of memsa. I would have thought that the shear of memsa is reserved only for a human being that is immersing himself, not for a keli. Therefore, kasav lechmana b'mei nida, the same type of water that a nida needs to be mitahir herself, that same type of water you need to be immersed kelim in. On the other hand, continues the Gemara, the ikasav lechmana b'mei nida, if the pasuk would have just written b'mei nida and not the word v'tayr, havamina, I would think it has all the chomers of a nida. I would think it needs hair of shemesh kenida. Just like a nida is not 100% pure to eat truma until the sun sets, until the sun sets on the day that she immersed herself, I would think the same is true for kelim. Therefore, kasav lechmana v'tayr li'alta. In regard to kelim, there is no concept of hair of shemesh. The complete process of tahara is finished as soon as you take the keli out of the water. Now, Tosfos points out that although we know the halacha is in regard to immersing needles or tiny kelim of that nature, to remove their tumma, you can immerse them in a razias. There is no need for memsa. That is davka in regard to removing the tumma. However, in regard to this concept of purchasing kelim from Eved Kechavim and the requirement that the Torah gives for tefillah at that point, this is a chiddush, and for this type of a tefillah you need memsa. Now, this is the Lashon HaRambam in Perek Yud Zayin of Hilchos Macholos Asuras, Halacha Hei. The Kibin Shekasa Vitar, Because after the Pasuk describes the concept of having to extract the Isser via the fire, being that the Pasuk adds of it Taher, Amru Chachamim, the Chachamim say, let's add another concept of Tahar over here, and that is the concept of Tefillah. Now, because the Rambam uses this Lashon Amru Chachamim, the Chachamim say, let's add another concept, it is the opinion of many, like the Ritva over here in our Sugya, many Rishonim say, that the Rambam seems to have held the opinion that the whole concept of Tefillah's Kalim is only in the Rabbanah. Pasha, the Pshat in the Pasuk, where the Pasuk says, Achta Meinida Yishata, and the Tayer, the Pasha, the Pshat in the Pasuk is, when the Kali is Tameh. If the keli touched a maze, or it touched something that renders it tameh, you have to make sure that it goes through the process of tahara in a mikvah, like anything that's tameh maze. But the idea of tovering a keli, which technically is tahar, just because you purchase it from an ovet kechavim, many feel from the Lashon Rambam it's mashma, that that concept is only midrabanan. The Rashi in the Tshuva, however, argues, he says it's the opinion of the Rambam that tefillas kelim is midiraisa. The Shagas Aryeh in the Tshuva Tachadash points out that many times the Rambam uses the Lashon of Amru Chachamim when the Chachamim describe Pshat in the Pasuk where it would have not been Mashma that way without the Drash of Chazal. The Kesef Mishnah of the Bach explained that it's Mashma from the Rambam that the concept of Tefillas Kelim is Allah HaLamashem is Sinai, because the Rambam uses the Lashon of Mipi HaShmur Lamdu. Now the Yeshua Siyakov wants to say that what the Rashi is really telling us in the Rambam is that the Rambam is also made that the Yatzim Chiyav to immerse newly purchased kalim in the kosher mikvah is midiraisa. However, the issa to use such kalim if they were not immersed, that isn't rabbana. And that is where the Rambam uses the lashon midiray seifrim. The issa to use it without tovering it isn't midiray seifrim. But midiraisa is just a chiyuv tefillah. From Rashi, however, here, the Rashba, the Rash, many other Rishonim is mashma that tefillah's kalim is midiraisa, and the drashas referred to over here in the Pesukim are not just the smachtas, they are etzim drashas. Although most of the Shainim do say that Tefillas Kelim is Nidiraisa, and most of the Shainim name on the Psak of the Shainim, the Shainim do explain that at least it is clearly Mashma that the Torah did not mean to answer any tafshul that was cooked in a Keli that required Tefillah and was not Ketovot. From Rav Shainim it is Mashma, as the Rashba wanted to say Pshat and the Rambam is, the Iser to use a Keli that's not Ketovot is only an Iser Midrabanan. However, it's just the Chi of Tefillah that's Nidiraisa. There are others who want to say that the chiyat tefillah midiraisa is in any type of a mikvah, as long as you have a reziyas mayim, which is a kosher mikvah. It's mechubah lekarka. It's not zayich and so on, it's kosher midiraisa. And the concept of arbaim sa is the chiyat midrabana. Many of these shittas are discussed by the Mishnah Berurah in Simon Shin Chav Gimel, Sikot Lamed Aleph, and Hilchos Shabbos, in regard to the halacha, if or if not, it is permitted to be tevil kelim on Shabbos. But once again, as far as our Gemara is concerned, if all of these psukim are actually drashas midiraisa, and all of these chayuvim are midiraisa, if the whole concept is midrabanan, and it's all asmachtas, or if the actual concept is diraisa, but only some of the halachas are midrabanan, there are virtually shitas for any of those arguments. One thing, however, is for certain, Zakta Gemara Baita, Omer of Nachman, Omer Rabbe Baravua, whatever the chayuv is, if it's midiraisa or midrabanan, there is no nafkamin if we are purchasing used kalim from Avdi Kechavim or brand new kalim from Avdi Kechavim. The chiyuv tefillah is a filah kalim chadashim b'mashma. And what is the raya? The hayishenim v'livnan is kichadashim dan. Why should there be any nafkamin between an old kalim and a new kalim? The nafkamin would obviously be that an old kalim may have some isser absorbed inside. But if you take the kalim and you manage to torch it up until it's white hot, then it's just as good as new as far as the Isser that's inside. Any Isser that was inside is totally destroyed, and despite that, there still is a Chiyuv Tefillah. So we see from here that it's not the Isser that's involved. Even if the Keli is brand new, it was never used. Despite that, there still is the Chiyuv Tefillah. Maskamer of Sheshes. Ihachi, if that's the case, so this concept of Tefillah has absolutely nothing to do with removing anything that's inside. So a filler zoos of the Sarva Lanami. Even a scissor that's used to cut woolen begotten with, that too should need tefillah. Until now we saw that it was relevant one way or another to the absorption of Isser. So when you aren't dealing with clay achila, the male, it's not shach. But if you're saying now that even a keli that's brand new, there is no havamina shabah havamina, that there is a drop of Isser in this, and despite that it needs the tefillah, so let's see any type of machine, any type of keli, even if it has absolutely nothing to do with food that you purchase from an Eved Kechavim, let's say that that too requires tefillah. Unless we told him no. Even though the ma'isa, the tefillah, is irrelevant to the isra that's absorbed inside, Still, however, Klei Suda Amun B'Pasha. B'Pasha is strictly referring to Klei Suda. Rashi explains, even though we have separated the concept of Tefillah from the concept of Isser, the fact is it's still in the same pasuk. The pasuk still says, Kol Davar She'yovi B'Yesh, anything that was used in fire, Tavidu B'Yesh, to take out the B'Liyos. And then the pasuk says, go ahead and be Tavil it. Even though you removed all of the B'Liyos, even though there's nothing left that's also, you have to be Tavil it. And we are indeed medayik from this, the same would apply itself to a brand new Keli. Even though there aren't any B'Liyos, you have to be Tavil it. But we do see that the pasuk is referring to the type of a Keli that could have B'Liyos. Why? Explains Rashi, because what are the types of kelim that are used over fire? It's clay suda, cooking utensils. And then we assume the chiyuv of tefillah only applies itself to the type of kelim that are generally used with fire, and that's only clay suda. The Pri Chadash in Yerdei Yisimin Kuvchav Tzivkot Aleph asks that there are many kelim which have absolutely nothing to do with food, but they're constantly used in relation with some type of a fire. So he quotes the Rashi's shot. The Rashi explains that what the Gemara means is as follows: Kol davar she'yovi b'yesh, taviru b'yesh, v'toher. So we dash from this: anything that is used with fire, and you have to put it back into fire to be metayer it. Now, what is that? That is only clay suda. There may be other kinds of kalim. There may be kalim that a blacksmith uses, for instance, that he constantly immerses in fire, or it's used in relation with fire, but you never have to put it into fire to be metayer it. The only thing you have to put into fire to capture it is strictly clay suda. Now, let us say the Akum has a scissor which he uses to cut material with, and he now wants to purchase this scissor and use it for food. So there's a machlokes in the Yechonim if now there would be a chiyuv tefillah or not. The Avni Nezer in Yerodei Yisimin Kovav says, as long as the Yid intends to use it for clay suda, there is a chiyuv tefillah, even though the Akum did not use it for clay suda. The Tzafnas Penach, however, disagrees. Others say that it depends on what the Akum intended to use this keli for. If he made it for a clay suda, even though he himself did not use it as such, there would be a chiyuv tefillah. If, however, he made it to cut material with, and the Yid decides to use it for a clay suda, in that case, there would not be a chiyuv tefillah. Let us see one more halacha. Zakti Gemara Vayta, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rabbi Bar Avua, lo yishanu, that there is a chiyuv tefillah, ela b'lekuchim, only if the keli is purchased from the Yerik Echadim. Ukamaisa Shahaya, that the Yidden acquired the kelim, they were kainit, it is now theirs. Avul Shi'ulin, but in regard to borrowed kelim loy, there is no chiyuv tefillah. So when utensils are borrowed from Yerik Echadim, provided that there is no kashrus shayla, or he kashrus them, he can use them without tefillah.